Welcome to the acclaimed podcast, Deep Dive with Andy and the White Whale.
And welcome to the 20th episode of the Deep Dive. We are heading into week 8. This is our only podcast of the week because your host, the White Whale, was traveling Monday. You did not get my instant hot take reactions, which I apologize for. But that's okay. The real hero of the weekend was Andy, who had a winning week last week. He's the hot hand right now, and we'll get his feedback on this week's card. We are recording today on Thursday, which means you're going to have a tough time getting our take on the Thursday night game, seeing as how it's in about 2 hours. But that's my fault. We recorded a brilliant episode last night. I went to edit it last night after we recorded it, and I completely botched the audio quality and the filtering and everything, and it was unintelligible. So here we are, re-recording episode number 20. Congratulations on making it to 20 episodes, Andy. Did you think we were going to get here when we started this this whole thing?
So technically, this is 21 then, since we did one last night.
Technically, our podcast is old enough to drink, yes.
Yes. No, this it's been fun. We were just talking about this off air, about like how easily it is for us to seem to fill the time, and we decided, I think we just like to talk about football.
Yeah, that's the bottom line.
It's so fun. I'm almost getting like, we're gonna be getting to the second half of the season. Not that into next weekend technically. I guess you're talking about like the second half of the season. But it's like Sunday scary is there once you get a little deeper where you're like it's almost over.
Oh, don't even say it, man.
I know it's going so fast. They grew up so fast.
I know. It's like 100 degrees here in California. It doesn't feel even remotely like we should be halfway through the football season. I'm sitting outside right now in beautiful sunny weather. I'm sure it's nice where you are, right?
Yeah, no. We're looking at the first measurable snowfall tomorrow.
What?
But luckily we're going to have some 30-mile-an-hour winds to go with it, so... It's going to be rain, snow, wind tomorrow with temps in the 30s. But there was one lunatic meteorologist that started talking about 4 to 6 inches of snow this morning about tomorrow, which that they withdrew that. They pulled back on that a little, so thank God for that. So it's just supposed to be a little ishy.
We've had it so hot recently, I wouldn't mind some cooler weather, but snow right now sounds absolutely like a disaster. So good luck there, my man.
It'll be nice for the Viking game there. It's in London. I don't know what the weather's doing there, I guess, whatever.
Yeah. You're bringing up a good point about the weather, because weather plays an angle in about half of the games on the slate this weekend. Basically, everything in the Eastern Seaboard is going to be dealing with wind and rain, it looks like. Some particularly serious wind and rain. So keep an eye on that as you're handicapping totals and sides here, and kind of think through how that affects your picks. I certainly factored it into my plays and have a couple plays that kind of are contingent upon wind and rain. So we'll see how that plays out. But always dicey when you're like me and you like to handicap on Monday and Tuesday and get your picks in on like Tuesday night and Wednesday morning. You really are kind of going with a leap of faith about the weather. So hopefully we'll see if it plays out the way I was hoping it would when we put all these bets in.
Yeah, now that we're getting later in the year, there's always wind. The wind is probably the most important factor. That can crop up whenever, but now you're going to start dealing with cold. You get cold, rain, and wind all in the same day, or cold, snow, wind. That's some pretty miserable conditions, and you definitely need to, especially with totals.
Yeah. Absolutely right. So one other thing I wanted to ask you about, because we haven't really talked about this on the podcast, or I haven't really mentioned it on my Twitter feed, because I've been kind of getting back into the swing of things this week after being on the road for about 10 days. What did you make of the Barstool Van Talk ESPN thing? That was kind of crazy. I know.
I guess I don't care. I'm not famous. But it makes you wonder, I'm like, have I ever tweeted anything horribly racist or misogynistic or anything.
Made you great, made your tweets?
Yes, super messed up. No, I don't think I've ever wrote any, and I don't care, whatever. Maybe somebody should go back, if someone's bored, go back and find the worst thing I've ever written, I guess. But yeah, that just turned into a whole big contest of who could dig up the most, you know, filthy tweet that someone, I mean, some of these people have had Twitter forever. Like,
yeah, man.
They really went way back on that. It was fun to watch, I guess, this whole thing. Yeah, I mean, just another black eye for ESPN. They just look dumb and out of touch. And,
yeah, what are they thinking
With all the networks, you know, the Fox Sports One, that was kind of one of the big ones, the first one that cropped in, but now CBS, NBC, and just all the other, and then all the major leagues have their own channels, and people are, you know, moving away from TV as a whole to begin with. In the race to stay relevant, I just fired Sam Ponder, I guess. As a Minnesota Vikings fan, I'm a little biased against the Ponder family.
They
can just go away. They ruined a few good years of Vikings for me.
That's funny. So I asked you about this because I know we both listen to Pardon My Take pretty much religiously at this point. I haven't missed an episode in a while, and I really, it's part of my morning routines on Monday, Wednesday, Friday to get my takes in. I really like those guys a lot. And I thought this was like semi-revolutionary that ESPN would make a deal to give them a TV spot. And I figured they would come up with some amazing content, especially they were partnered with the guys that do the Men in Blazers guides. And they, you know, it had all the makings for really great content. And I was floored that ESPN canceled it. And I'm a little stay woke on this. I kind of wonder if this wasn't like always kind of planned that they were going to cancel this after one episode. And they kind of use it as an opportunity to like, kind of, you know, make it up to their talent. Like, hey, look at us, you know, we listen to you guys, you know, in the wake of all of the other terrible things that have been happening with their talent this fall. Like, they're like kind of using it as a kind of a means of the makeup or something like that. And I also I'm also a little stay wokey if this wasn't like an entire attempt by like the sports entertainment industry to kind of divorce Big Cat and PFT from the Barstool brand or something, you know, like you guys could have had this, you know, you could have had all this big TV thing if you just weren't associated with Barstool. And, you know, so I'm a little stay woke because to fire them after one episode was a little strange. And the other thing it could have been is I kind of wondered if it had anything to do with bringing Dan Patrick on, too, because, you know, Skipper has like a specific stick up his ass about Dan Patrick being on ESPN Airwaves. So,
you know, in the Dan Patrick did leave, you know, under semi-civil terms. It's not like he was let go or he gave him a big F you when he left, but, you know, they didn't like him leaving. He was a huge talent, and he did the dumping. And it's just, I don't know. I don't watch much of the shows on ESPN anymore. I watch the live sports that they have. It used to be a cultural phenomenon. I don't know how many old, you know, it depends how old you are listening to this, but if you're, you know, 30 or even, you know, upper 20s or older, you can remember SportsCenter was the shit. And you had, those were the guys, your Stuart Scotts and your Patricks and your, who was Dan Patrick's guy?
Keith Olbermann, yeah.
Yeah, Olbermann, yeah. How did I not think of that guy? I mean, those guys, they were awesome. The catchphrases, the fun, and it was highlights and fun, and now ESPN sucks.
Oh, yeah, man. Hey, you know, yeah, back in the day, SportsCenter was a way to kind of immerse yourself in sports through your television, which was the primary tool you had for entertaining yourself, right? And you could just be like, wow, you mean I can just put on the television and it'll just show sports recaps and be funny and entertaining for hours? Like, this is cool. Like, this is fun. Now, like, that's pretty much what you use Twitter for, right? Or your phone, or, you know.
Maybe this is a good time to announce our spinoff podcast, where we bring what's the template for this? You bring in a pretty girl, which doesn't work in a podcast. She can be horrifying looking, I guess. Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
So pretty voice, and then
pretty
we'll
voice. Yeah.
We'll scream at each other. That's like that's I hate those shows.
I hate it, man. That's become, it. I can't watch that shit.
Cultural norm, like the skip and the I don't know the name of the other one. The ones where they just like, well, you know, they sit in a production meeting and it's all just, well, I'm on this side, you take the other side, and we'll just scream at each other. Like that's yeah. not sports. I don't know.
No, it's awful. So yeah, I'm with I think clearly the talent of Big Cat and PFT is so unique right now, and they are clearly like they are the funniest and most entertaining voices in sports and on Twitter and in the podcast space, and their success will transcend to video eventually, whether it's with part of Barstool or part of the NBC Row guys. I just hope that they keep that relationship with Michael Davies and NBC and the Men in Blazers guys strong, because that's some pretty phenomenal content too, and that seems like a match made in heaven. So fingers crossed that they continue to rise, and I'll have a good laugh when PFT commenter and Big Cat have some television show or have some video show when ESPN kind of ceases to exist as a network, and they can joke about that time they had a one episode television show on a network that got canceled. So let's move into this card, man. It's a short week. This is the smallest card this week and next week. We're dealing with six teams on bye, so we have fewer games, and with that, fewer great matchups. Parity across the league seems to be dominating right now. You're seeing a lot of relatively short lines as you look down the card. Outside of four games that I'm looking at here, all the lines are a touchdown or under. You got a lot of them. A lot of these games are coin flips, really. So it should make for a fun week of handicapping, a fun week of football watching. And let's touch on Thursday real quick, even though this is going to be stale because most people aren't going to get this till after the game starts or after the game's over. I backed the over on this one. I feel kind of stupid for backing the over on this one because these are kind of two dead under teams on a short week where defense sort of rules on Thursday nights in general, and you got two defenses that might be good and two offenses that might be atrocious. All that said, I kind of zigged when everyone else was zagging here. I took the over because it was just low enough that I was like, you know what, if we can get 17 points out of Miami, if they can, there's going to be some turnovers, there's going to be some short fields, there's going to be some long field goals. 37 points was just enough for me to be enticed to grab the over. I'm seeing it's back up to 38 already after we grabbed it at 37. Can I interest you in any Baltimore in this game?
I was just going to say, if no one is going to hear this before the game, probably, 100 unit max bomb Twitter unit play, Baltimore -3. If we're gonna do the crazy tout free play 100 unit bomb, DM me PayPal and bio, I'm gonna go -2.5, -130. Because nice. Why not? Nice. If you're gonna go 100, if you're gonna do 110 units, you might as well.
You know
go
the thing, man.
100, what's 130 then? So
you know what they say. You know what they say? The juice only matters if you lose.
Only matters if you lose. This is such a weird game. Matt Moore, somebody else, I don't remember which. I was listening to something or reading something, and someone brought up the chip on the shoulder factor as far as, oh, the starter went down. It's my chance. Oh, no, they're bringing in an announcer. Like he has to feel he has to feel poopy about that, Like yeah, so he's this. So now it's my time. I'm Matt Moore. I don't know what his voice sounds like, but I'm sure
that was probably good. That was pretty close.
This has to be if he wants to pull something like that, and pull a what was his name up?
Pull
a Matt Castle,
Mike Glennon. He wants the Matt Castle contract. He wants the Mike Glennon contract. Yeah, if he strings together some good games.
I mean, if he can play out of his mind for 2 or 3 weeks, someone will put him on a roster to start him next year. So that looms large for him, but I mean, I guess we'll see. We'll see how my 130 unit bomb does.
The Baltimore defense is probably the difference-making unit here. Baltimore's at home. Baltimore has the more experienced coach, the more experienced quarterback. On a Thursday night, those things tend to win out. So I'm with you. Let's go -2.5, -130, and let's get, I'm kind of joking, but I'm kind of not. I'm probably going to put in a pretty heavy play on Baltimore before this. No, I really am. I probably am going to play Baltimore before this game starts. They need this game bad, and they're at home, and you got Jim Harbaugh's going to pull out some trick plays or something crazy. Justin Tucker's going to kick a 55-yard field goal as time is winding down or something to get this thing home. Okay, I'm not going to lay the juice, but I am going to back Baltimore in this one. And let's move on to the Sunday card. Your Vikings heading to jolly old England to play in Twickenham versus the very dysfunctional Browns. The Browns are the most dysfunctional team I think we have in the league right now. They have a three-headed monster at quarterback. Hugh Jackson might be the worst coach in the league, probably top three. We'll circle back on that later. Vikings are laying 9.5. That's an awful lot for Case Keenum, but he's been playing pretty well. What's your outlook on this game?
Vikings by 1,000.
Okay. All right. That's
as
conservative.
Usual,
okay.
I mean, they're looking good. This would be such a letdown if they didn't go win by over a touchdown. It's a weird spot. Yeah. I did hear something today about Cleveland's not going to travel till Friday.
Oh, so dumb. The kiss of death.
Yes.
Shutout is in play.
Already a 9.5-point dog. They're not going to travel until Friday. That gives them very little time to adjust to the time difference. So essentially, they are playing in very early morning if they don't get any adjustment over the course of 48 hours. So not that they held a big chance to win this game, but that doesn't bode well for them. I think the Vikings probably cover the number. I don't know if I'm going to lay all that wood. I might, just because I might, even if it doesn't make my card, I might be secretly betting the Vikings every week anyway. I might do a team total under, like put my eggs in the Minnesota Vikings basket.
You know what we've seen three absolutely terrible games in London so far this year. The Jags effectively shut out the Ravens. The Saints actually shut out the Dolphins, and then the Rams actually shut out the Cardinals. We have consistently seen teams no show over there. Hey, London, NFL football is so great. Here is another 38-0 game, Minnesota versus Kaiser, and then Hogan, and then whoever the third guy is, Cody Kessler.
Retweet that you retweeted the other day. That made me laugh so hard. The one guy compared. It's even funnier when I explain a tweet over the air here, but it likens the dysfunctional quarterback situation to a poorly used bullpen. everything everything Hugh is doing just reeks of, well, they can't fire me if I'm having a quarterback problem. It's not my fault. I'll just keep cycling. He's hurt. He can't fire me if he got hurt.
Meanwhile, this is the same asshole that was stumping to bring RG3 back this year. Is the same guy that was like, nah, Deshaun Watson, he's not an NFL quarterback. This is just an absolute train wreck in Cleveland. I know that the company line is, we're building for the future, it's not fair to evaluate us, blah, blah, blah. That is horse shit. They should have so much better performance than this. Their defense is a freaking disaster. Myles Garrett's not even going to be in there because of the concussion protocol. What is going on?
This team is a dumpster.
Yeah, the proverbial dumpster fire has taken over as the literal and figurative reality in Cleveland, and it is not fun to watch. So,
and then also another little quick nibble it on there. They did purchase. My insider at United Air said they did purchase a ticket with Stephon Diggs' name on it, which none of that is true. None of that's just information that's known. I didn't have an insider, but so it would be really awesome. It would be awesome to see him play.
I agree. Agreed. Okay. That'll be the morning slot. Hopefully it's a 40-0 blowout like we're hoping for, and Minnesota goes into their bye absolutely white hot, and then they're in control of their own destiny in the NFC North, because I got some hefty futures on that Minnesota North, and if we could lock those up, that could cover up some other terrible futures I made before the preseason started. So let's go Minnesota. Let's talk about these 1 o'clock games now. I'm going to start with the top, with the first in order here in by the Vegas numbers, which is Chicago, New Orleans. People think Chicago's a feisty team. They have pulled off some improbable wins now as underdogs against the, most recently against the Panthers, but previously, underdog win against the Steelers. They came damn close to winning outright against the Vikings. They came damn close to winning outright against the Falcons. What do you make of this Bears team? And am I crazy? Really, really drinking the New Orleans Saints Kool-Aid.
Yeah, it's dumb. I don't like it.
You're on Bears.
No, I just say, yeah, and I don't know where I read this, but when a team wins, you know, there is a little, and it depends on the situation, but often there's some conventional wisdom to, you know, sell high on them. But when a team wins, right. And nobody talks about the team. They're talking about the other team that lost. They're not talking about how the Bears defense played. They're talking about how Cam mucked it all up. So I think it's one of those where maybe the Bears still aren't getting any respect for, I mean, it doesn't matter, you know, who you played. And if your offense didn't get it done, you won a game in the NFL against, you know, a very good, you know, it used to be a very good quarterback. There might be some returning injury. But I really think it's one of those where, on the other hand, you could probably sell high on New Orleans at this point. They are at home, which is going to be tough for the Bears. But I just think I'm probably going to go the opposite of you here and take the points with the Bears.
Okay.
I think I think the defense for the – and that's one of those things where all the talking heads and everyone's talking about the Saints defense and how good it is. And I like to usually go against that sort of thing too. I think they're in for regression. They're not – this is not the 85 Bears. I shouldn't have used the Bears in this situation, but since we're actually talking about them on the other side. But I am going to go with the Bears +9. I think it's a
– Yeah.
So okay. High on the Saints.
It looks like the sharp money on this game is on the under. You're talking about two pretty frisky defenses who people don't necessarily associate as defenses, and it looks like kind of the sharps identified that 48 was too high. It's been bet down to 47.5, and I could see it getting pushed even farther if this trickle of money continues. I'm on the Saints in this one, and the reason is pretty straightforward. I think the world of Drew Brees, and he is having, you know, his career is not as close to over as I expected heading into this season. And I love what they're doing with their running backs right now. I love the, I just love the dynamic, the dynamic play calling is just super fun to watch. And the Saints are fun to watch, and their defense is getting better. And when I think about how this game could potentially play out, Trubisky on the road, they're going to have to, they're going to hand off the ball a million times, obviously, but it'd only take one mistake, one turnover, give the Saints a short field, give them the opportunity to score some early touchdowns. And if the Saints get a double-digit lead at any point in this game, then I feel very, very comfortable holding Saints -9. And there's just no scenario where I see the Chicago Bears coming in to backdoor this thing. This plays out more like the Bucks versus the Bears kind of game, where the Bears continue to turn the ball, can't help themselves but turn the ball over, can't really get their passing game going, put the opposition in position to score easy touchdowns. We saw the Saints do this against the Lions. The Lions were frisky enough to come back. However, they had a powerful enough offense that they were always sort of live in that game. But this to me seems more like the first half of that Saints-Lions game where the Saints kind of get out to a comfortable lead and put the Bears away early. So we'll see how we'll have to circle back and touch on this on Monday, how this one worked out, because we don't usually go head to head on these sort of things, but this will be fun. Let's move down to the next couple of games here. I have circled as underplays because of the weather. The first one is Jets Falcons. The second one is Bucks Panthers. Let's talk Jets Falcons first. This one was interesting because it was expected to be more like Atlanta -7. But after that terrible, terrible performance on Sunday night from the Falcons and Steve Sarkisian, who looks like he may be back on sauce for all that matters. Don't want to joke about those sort of things because I may or may not have, substance abuse issues myself. So don't want to pass any judgment here. But
you've never called a jet sweep from the one. I don't care how ginned up you get to start tweeting your negative shit. That was some of the worst play calling. Like the missed, you know, it was what 20-0 or 23-0 at one point. And I'm thinking, God, the missed field goals and then that play calling. I mean, it should be like 13-0 or 23-13 or maybe 23-17. Like maybe the Patriots still take the game there, but boy, they left a lot of points. They left a lot of points on the table. They looked bad.
Yeah, so the analysis that I'm reading is pretty spot on here. Matt Ryan is regressing to the tune that your friendly podcast hosts expected at the preseason. In fact, one of these weeks I'm going to go back and cut that audio when we were previewing the Falcons and talking about how his performance last year was such a statistical anomaly. There was no way he could possibly repeat. And sure enough, a lot of the success they had last year was really born out of Shanahan's scheming. He had guys doing really unique pre-snap motion, which was scheming them into open space. And Matt Ryan, if he's throwing the ball 10 to 15 yards down the field or farther, he needs this guy wide freaking open. If it's anywhere kind of close coverage, he's going to overthrow his target. He is not he is not kind of putting the ball in Julio Jones's hands. He's asking Julio Jones to make Superman type of plays and catches. They're struggling to put themselves into good positions on first down, which was kind of the hallmark of their offense last year, is kind of get a big chunk of yards on first down. Then they can be a little bit more aggressive on second and third down, get a lead, let their defense play downhill. All of that has completely gone by the wayside these last several weeks, and the Falcons are in deep, deep trouble if they don't turn it around soon. All of that said, the Jets' defense is not great, but they're good enough, I think, to continue to cause problems for the Falcons. The weather looks like a problem here. The Jets themselves have been completely overperforming on offense and are due for some regression. The Falcons, you know, to the degree that they need to save their season, I think they're going to look to their defense to play a little harder, to get their pass rush going a little bit more, to get more out of their safeties and their cornerbacks and coverage. And all of this to me just spells under. I don't see either of these teams significantly going over 20 points, which to me makes under 46 a lovely play. Let's talk about Bucks. Let's move to Bucks Panthers here.
Now that we're recording a little closer to the weekend, you can even get a little bit more of a. This is one where, you know, maybe if you're not comfortable with this under yet, kind of monitor the weather, because there is supposed to be some gross weather all along the coast this weekend. And if you like college football too, Saturday too, there's some spots where there could be some really windy, shitty weather.
Yep. And speaking of, in Tampa Bay, they're calling for 20-mile-an-hour winds. And then you mix that in with two kickers who are having a very difficult time kicking field goals anyway. And I think the Panthers potentially getting Kuechly back makes a huge difference on their defense. The Panthers' offense is struggling mightily without their intact offensive line and without some of their key weapons on offense like Greg Olsen, et cetera. Devin Funchess has kind of come back to earth. Kelvin Benjamin's not playing particularly well. I don't think either of these teams sniffed 20 either. So I'm grabbing under 46 again. As far as the Falcons, Jets, Panthers, Bucks, do you have any advice on any of these sides, or are these all stayaways because these teams are also middle of the road?
You ever have such a bad experience with a team, and then you just don't want to bet them again?
Yeah, like,
every week. I'm just so mad at the Falcons right now that I feel like, and it's not like, oh, I'm mad, I'm not going to bet you, but it's like, you know, I know in my head that I'm jilted, I'm tilted, and I'm not thinking straight about the Falcons, where I don't think I should be. Just I'm so mad at them. That's all I think about when I'm trying to figure it out. So I'm just, it's one of those where I'm going to take a breather from this week. And I've backed the Jets a lot this year, so I don't know if I should be betting that well anymore. So I'm staying away from that. I do like your under in the Bucks game. I might pile on that depending on what that number looks like. A little later in the week, I'm not a guy that bets on weather 4 days in advance because it can change. But if it is looking shiesty, I will probably join you there.
Yeah, what's the old George W. Bush saying? Screw me once, shame on you. Screw me twice, don't get screwed again. Something.
Yeah, pretty close. So
staying away from the Falcons until further notice because I don't want to get screwed again. Let's move down the card here. The next one I'm kind of holding my nose on. The San Francisco 49ers, who are undecided at quarterback, I'm expecting they're going to go with Beathard. Beat hard. They are heading to Philadelphia to play the number one team in the National Football League at the record of 6-1. Philadelphia Eagles. Carson Wentz, the captain of Wentzylvania. That was one of the funnier moments from the Lost podcast yesterday when you were
the
cracking me up
episodes.
About Wentzylvania. The Wentzylvania on the Lost episode was cracking me up hard. Let me ask you I'm laying the points here, even though the Niners are as bad as they appear to be on paper. There's a couple reasons here why I think 13 is too many points. I actually ended up grabbing 12.5, but I've seen some 13s out there. I'm an advocate of whatever you can grab here because I think this stays closer to a field goal or a touchdown kind of game. I'm expecting Philadelphia to win, but I don't think it's going to be easy for them. A couple reasons why. One, the Eagles will be without a couple of key components on their defense, including Hicks, who's out for the season at linebacker. The Eagles will be without their all-world left tackle, Jason Peters. While most of the initial reaction that I've heard from that and from people and that I had myself was, oh, man, Wentz isn't as good under pressure. Now that there's going to be pressure coming from the left side, he's going to start to regress a little bit. But Wentz has kind of solved his happy feet under pressure a little bit this year, where he's running, he's scrambling more often than he was taking ugly sacks sort of to the end of last year and a little bit to the beginning of this year. He still takes a couple ugly sacks a game and, you know, keep an eye out on how often he's getting sacked because he takes some unnecessary hits. But all that said, more even than the passing game and the downgrade in their pass protection, I'm concerned about their running game here and them getting unbalanced on offense. Most of the Eagles' runs have been to the left side of the line and have been anchored by run blocking by Jason Peters. That's been kind of their only successful running strategy, really. And, you know, LeGarrette Blount has put up some interesting and impressive statistics, really, I guess. But without the likes of Peters run blocking for him, and if they have to switch up and try to on the fly figure out a new running scheme, I'm very concerned that they're just going to be bogged down in the running game. And if they're struggling to run, and if even more pressure comes on to young Carson Wentz here, who's probably reading his own press clippings a little bit this week, this to me smells like a much closer game than two touchdowns. So I'm going to lay the points. I mean, I'm going to grab the points here.
This is one I love from the beginning of the week, and I didn't really worry about grabbing an early number because anywhere between 11 and 13 is samesies, which I go and say that, and I'll get bit by a hook on some weird game that ends on a 12. But I love this. I think it's an absolute sell high. That's a ton of points. It always seems like this. Whoever's the hottest team in the NFL, you just go against them the next week, and absolutely it seems like you're going to win against the spread. I like what the Niners have been doing, obviously besides last week where I almost bet on them. And yep. I said, God, Dallas is this big old public team. This is going to get bad. It'll go to 7, and then I'm going to grab that 7 at 110. And it never did, and I just said, I'll just stay away. I have enough action today. And, boy, sometimes not betting a loser feels just as good as a winner because that got out of
absolutely,
hand
absolutely, man.
In a hurry. But I do like it in the bounce back spot.
You would have burned that ticket by the end of the first quarter. The Niners covered 6 weeks in a row, you know, and it's tough to cover 7 weeks in a row. And they covered 5 weeks in a row. It's tough to cover 6. I forgot they lost. They lost against the spread week 1 against the Panthers in a pretty ugly game as well. Ironically, also at home. So for some reason, the Niners aren't playing particularly well at home. The other kind of wrinkle on interesting here about, you know, people assume that the West-East factor is in play here. I'll just note that the Niners, this is like their fourth trip east this season. So if anyone is adjusted to this point, it's the Niners. So I'm not really giving them, I'm not expecting a downgrade in their performance based on the travel spot here because they've gone east so often.
Yeah, they seem to get it. I don't know. It doesn't seem to affect them.
Yeah. They put it all together against the Redskins on the East Coast at the early slot 2 weeks ago. I'll tell you that much. Jesus. So, Niners Jesus here. Let's see. This moves us into another interesting West-East travel spot where the Oakland Raiders are heading to the Orchard Park to play Buffalo Bills. Not expecting weather to be a factor in this one. This is one of the few East Coast games that looks like you're going to have pretty decent weather. I have alternately made strong cases for both teams here in my head as I handicap this game. Oakland's getting extra rest after playing Thursday night. Oakland has, under the Jack Del Rio regime, has traditionally followed up a big underdog win with another win. That's kind of been one of the strange and surprising hallmarks of the Jack Del Rio tenure is that his team doesn't lose focus after they have their Super Bowl and win it. Oakland also has played a lot of East Coast games the last two years, and has performed very well in those games. They've done something to kind of prepare their circadian rhythms last year for this, and it's carried over to this year where they're not walking zombies in the first half of these games on the East Coast like most of the other teams that go west to east and play at 10 in the morning are. And so I've kind of talked myself into Oakland is back a little bit here, and they're going to put up another nice performance. I've also talked myself into Tyrod Taylor is legitimately a good quarterback, and he's going to feast on this Raiders defense. We have seen a little bit of suspect protection from the Buffalo Bills offensive line, but the Buffalo Bills, their defense has looked like the real deal at times this season.
I thought.
All this said, I ended up kind of basically making a case in my head that either team can score 4 touchdowns here, which made the over a very enticing play, sitting as how it was sitting at 45.5. I'm sorry, 45, I got it. And it's still sitting at 45.5. I'm expecting that puppy to keep going up cross into some key numbers here eventually, because I do think this game goes into the '60s, or at least gets close to the '60s with both teams scoring in the kind of the 27 to 28 range. I think this is actually my first 2-unit play of the week, second 2-unit play of the year. First one was the Seahawks Rams under, and that puppy was golden. Boy. That was golden from the first Todd Gurley fumble into the end zone.
Fumble right, yeah. I was so mad because I was on that too, and they marched down the field and promptly fumbled it through the back of the end zone.
Right and through the back.
Right, then you know, here we go.
I think what would be the ideal start to this, Buffalo takes the kickoff 106 yards for a touchdown, gets the scoring started off on a fast note. hope, you know, we've seen that. We've seen Amari Cooper. He's back from the dead. He's apparently not he's out of the witness protection program. He's catching passes again for Oakland Raiders. You know, they it's going to be a little difficult for, you know, it's going to be a little difficult at times, I suspect, for each team to really, you know, stop the opposing offense. And I think we see some back and forth scoring here in a very tight game that I could see go either way against the spread. So 2 units for me on the over, and let's have some scoring, folks.
Yeah, totals can take years off your life. I think the biggest total I bet on was at Indianapolis Seattle over this earlier in the season, where I needed, what, 40?
Oh, that Sunday night game.
I think it was 43, 41, what, somewhere in the low 40s. And it was 3-2, like 18 minutes into the game. Oh, good. But that was pretty clear pretty quick.
Yep.
So.
Yep. Yeah, no, the other angle I'll mention when you back a total like this, I like either team's chances to come back if the game gets a little out of hand. Both have, you know, kind of a knack for comebacks. So I think, you know, I think this is a nice spot here for some points. So over 45 it is, and we'll see if we can bring home another 2-unit win. Let's talk. I don't have anything on this next one. The next one is Colts and Bengals.
Yeah, that's disgusting. That's worse.
No, I'm capping. I'm capping a Bengals 11-point win. The line's 10. I'm capping 43 points. The line's 42. So I am staying off of this disaster of a game. The
Bengals have been very bipolar. They seem to be getting it, but that's just too big of a number to be laying with some of the things. They don't seem to understand that Joe Mixon is the best player on their team.
And it's so weird. I don't understand.
And then he'll have a great drive, and he'll look really good, and then they'll give it to Giovanni for like a negative 8-yard play where
strange. They refuse to develop offensive rhythm. It's so weird. Let me ask you about the Colts real quick and Chuck Pagano. I keep kind of coming back to this, and I'm not sure what the answer is. Who is the worst coach in the league right now? There's some, you know, among the many complaints about the football league right now, National Football League right now, I think a lot of them can kind of be born out of bad coaching and bad player development, because the kids coming in from college are decent. They're just not being developed well. They're not being put in schemes to succeed. Maybe no more so than Indianapolis. But is Pagano the worst coach in the league, or is it Hugh Jackson, or is it Bob McAdoo? Ben McAdoo, whatever the guy is.
It doesn't matter. You won't need to ever know his name again after this year, so it doesn't matter. Not great, Bob.
I was hoping to not ever have to know his name again after this bye, but it looks like they're going to retain his ass.
They have kind of said they're going to stick with him for the year, which is – that's – bold move, Cotton. Yeah, I don't know. He was smart enough to give up play calling, at least, because he was very bad at play calling. Right off that list.
They hired him for his play calling, man. What are you talking about?
They hired him
for the thing he was bad at.
Fun going back 7 weeks. I had such a fun day in Las Vegas, and then I bet on the Giants that night against the Dallas Cowboys. Boy, that was ugly. So they all suck equally, I think. I don't want to take too hard of a stance. I mean, they all, in today's world where everyone gets a trophy, I think they all suck in their own special way. Like, in their unique ways, they're all the worst coach. Because McAdoo, I mean, boy, and there was a spot there where they were, you know, what was it? The cornerback, I can't think of his name. Cromartie.
Yeah, Cromartie. Okay,
he got dismissed from the team for a little bit, and the play calling, they've looked terrible, and he just has a stupid face in the sidelines where he doesn't seem to even care. He doesn't get animated whatsoever. And Pagano, I don't know, maybe blame the management a little more with the complete mishandling of Andrew Luck and what, like you said,
where
they just lied to their fans.
Lying to your fans.
Yeah, maybe.
Hey, he might be ready for week one.
You know, if you won't know unless you get these season tickets.
You should probably
re-up on that. Andrew Luck's coming back. Yeah, they're very disingenuous.
Yeah. Meanwhile, he's 185 pounds on Labor Day, and it's like he's playing weight as like 250. It's like, yeah, sure, he's almost ready to come back on the field. That was a disaster. If you're a Colts fan, your organization has lied to you. You should be extremely offended. If you're a Browns fan, your organization has passed on Carson Wentz in the draft. They have passed on Deshaun Watson in the draft. They have brought in a three-headed monster, none of whom are capable quarterbacks. If any of them are capable, it's Deshaun Kizer, and they've mismanaged his development in a way that's made him a complete and total, you know, flop. And I'll never forget, like, week two, they put him, they're on the road. But they had a good week one at home against the Steelers. They played pretty competitive football. Week two, they go on the road. They're at Baltimore. They had Kizer throw the ball like 50 damn times. They had him making all kinds of crazy throws that you just don't put a rookie quarterback in that situation when you're playing against a top-tier defense on the road. Like, it's insane. And sure enough, he's turning the ball over in the end zone. He does it a couple times. It shakes his confidence. It carries into week three against the Colts. And the kid is never the freaking same. And he has just dreadful turnovers in the red zone against the Jets game. You pull him at halftime for Kevin Hogan. The experiment is over. You've ruined this kid, at least for this year, at least under this coaching staff. And that was your answer for quarterback.
That's one of the big you know, debates in sports that people have. It's very polarizing as far as, should you let a rookie quarterback sit and learn, or should you just throw him in the fire and get him some experience? And it's very situational. That's super great. Like, every argument in the world is gray area. But, I mean, just you can tell when they did the wrong thing. Like, and some of it has to do with not only, you know, playing him or not, but, like you said, the situations you're putting him in. And they just look like they are, gosh, it's like the old Cubs organization, what they did to Mark Pryor. Like,
yeah.
Maybe the Twins should have taken you. We'd have been so good to you. Instead, the
criminal mismanagement
just destroyed him. Like, that sucks.
Criminal.
It sucks when you see a good, because Kizer could be, you know, if he ended up in a better franchise, he could be a great quarterback. Who knows? But it looks, as of right now, they are absolutely bumbling the situation.
Yep. On that positive note, let's take a quick break. We got one more morning game and then the afternoon games and evening spots here. This is going well. This re-record, we are on freaking fire. The people are going to get the pod a day late, but they are getting a dollar back for the quality of this episode. So well done, my friends. Let's take a break. What's going on elsewise in the world of sports? I'm getting my nuts kicked in the NBA right now. I don't know what I was thinking trying to dive in and handicap NBA while kind of my heart and brain were more dedicated to the NFL. And on top of that, obviously way too early to be trying to use analytics to predict scores and totals right now. Totals and coin flips, and I should at least be kind of... It should be all situational, yeah, exactly. Exactly. Bet against the teams that are in Utah. Bet against the teams that are in back-to-back road situations. I'm sure there's some other ones. Bet on the team. What was the guy? Bet the team total over, whoever's playing the Cavaliers in the first half.
I saw that.
The Cavaliers are playing 0.0.
And I never know how some of these people come up, especially maybe it's me. And I feel like I'm a semi-creative person, but I have the shittiest Twitter handle ever. I do enjoy Hand Jabs for Ewoks.
Oh, yeah, I love that guy.
That's I think that's who said it. I have no idea. I have no idea like who that guy is, where he's from, what's he about. But he comes in and says fun stuff.
Yeah, I know. We've been following each other on here for probably going on 3 years, and his content is fresh and spectacular as any. And we're back. Talk about this. Maybe the game that I'll watch the most intently out of this morning slate here is Chargers at New England. Philip Rivers, he's recaptured a little bit of the magic. It looks like his arm is back from whatever injury he was dealing with early in the season. He's slinging the ball like a champ again. And meanwhile, it looks like the Patriots will be without their starting linebacker and maybe only difference maker on defense, Dante Hightower. He is done for this season with a pectoral injury. I captained bet this before I knew that, but I feel even stronger about this now, if that's even possible. This Patriots defense is not good. They have been kind of gift. You know, they should have lost to the Jets because their defense could not stop Josh McCown. They looked good in prime time last week, and maybe people are thinking that they are still capable of coming and improving. But you know, I think they're hitting the reset button here now that Hightower's out, and I am looking for the Chargers to be a frisky live dog in this spot against the Patriots. What do you think on this one?
If there's a time to, everybody saw what they did. You know, if there was a time to go against that.
I
feel like maybe this is the same thing as the I'm so mad at the Patriots for doing well, where I want to just convince them right now. So I feel like I might be a little jilted, but I do like the Chargers' upward trend. I guess maybe they're not the boy. They've just been unlucky for like 2 years, which is injuries and like if you go back and remember how they started last year, like. The way they were losing games, was just fantastic.
Going back 2 years.
It's just been fantastic.
Yeah, just unbelievable.
So, but they seem to be getting a little further away from being just the unluckiest, terrible team in the world. And, I like Gordon. And going back to the Propapalooza, I had him to have the most rushing touchdowns, so now he's catching touchdowns left and right, which is just good for him.
He's got 4 1-yard receiving touchdowns.
As many receiving touchdowns as Gronkowski.
Unbelievable. I'll say, you know what else is worthy of mentioning about the Chargers? Their pass rush is all universe right now. Joey Bosa and Melvin Ingram. My goodness gracious, those two ferocious pass rushes. The Patriots' offensive line, I think, is overrated. I don't think they're a particularly good pass-protecting unit. I think Brady's kind of pocket awareness and fast release when he's needed it has kind of bailed out the offensive line at times this season. And I see chaos ensue in this game with Bosa and Ingram just winning the morning. And, this seems like I have two units on the Chargers. I might as well mention that. I have two units on the Chargers plus 7. I feel like this is a game that's decided by a field goal. I probably am also going to look at parlaying the Chargers money line with the over in this game, because if the Chargers do what I think they're going to do on offense, this game could be like 33-30. Chargers kind of a win. So that's going to be my fun play outside of my official cards this weekend, is I'm going to grab some Chargers money line in the over. If I'm wrong and the Patriots win, I guess I can be like, well, at least my Patriots this is not a good spot for them though. Really, it's not. This is the defense is still fraudulent, and I think their offense is gonna have their hands full with the stout pass rush that Chargers are bringing into town. So. We get
the pass rush angle. They should be harassing Tom Terrific there.
Yeah, and basically everybody and their mother was fading the Patriots last week in primetime, and they came through for all the Patriots backers. And so no one's sniffing it this week. It's kind of like you mentioned, like, screw me once, shame on you. Screw me twice, shame on me. No one is interested in getting the Patriots really this week. I'm only seeing 30% of the tickets so far coming in on the Chargers, even though I think there's some bigger bets, even though, yeah, because the line's not really budging very. It's actually moving a little bit towards the Chargers, I guess. Anyway, let's move on. I'm gonna be watching that one closely, and we're gonna learn a lot about these two teams. We're gonna learn a lot.
We are gonna take some education.
We're gonna learn a lot. We are gonna learn a lot. Afternoon, Sunday afternoon. There's only two games: Houston, Seattle, and Dallas.
Yeah, both are
good
game.
Though, right?
A late afternoon East Coast game, which goes to show you. Then no one knows what they're doing, apparently. But yeah, I hate it when there's only two late games like this. But I am happy that they're both. I like these matchups as far as if I wasn't betting on them, if I had to just watch football, like I would be excited to watch these games. So that's nice, at least. I got that going for me. And I really, 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 really like the Redskins in this spot anyway. So. If you want to talk about that one first.
Yeah. I was with you, man. When I looked at the first thing I looked at going down the card, the first thing that jumped out at me was Redskins are getting points. That's kind of crazy. They're home. Their back's against the wall. They're desperate. They have extremely favorable matchups in a couple places on offense against the Dallas defense. Like, why in the world are they getting points at home? And I figured it out. You look at their injury report, and it is a who's who. It is a who's who of matters on that roster. So it's going to be dicey. I'm with you, and I support the Redskins. And we should probably pick them in our contest in the Twitter Super Contest.
I have
that we're
not
in.
Even looked at the Wednesday lines yet. Wow.
But yeah, let's keep them in the mind for that. And my official play on this one was the under. This is, again, the weather's going to be a factor. This looks like it's going to be heavy rainfall. I think with the injuries to the – or the limitations of on the players and on the Redskins' offensive line make me think the Redskins are going to struggle ever so slightly to move the ball compared to how they've looked in weeks past. Dallas has a relatively decent pass rush that's going to be in a favorable matchup at times against that offensive line and passing situations. Flip the script on that. We look like we are going to get Josh Norman back, which is pretty cool for continuing to smother the overrated Dez Bryant. And there's some decent run stopping. You know, there's some decent run stopping pieces on the Redskins front seven. So hopefully they can contain Elliott. And this game matters a lot to both teams. And when we're 8 weeks into the season, and you have two teams playing in division that both desperately need a win, I'm looking under almost every time, and we're getting a big fat number here of 50. Actually, did I get 50 or 50 and a half even? I'm on 50.
As of right now, it has dropped. I mean, you got a good number. It's 48 and a half.
Yeah.
Right now.
I'm looking for Redskins 24, Cowboys 23. And I am under 50 on this, and I don't discourage anyone from backing the Redskins in the spot. This is a tailor-made setup spot for pros versus Joes. Joes all rushing to back the Cowboys on the road as a short favorite in a game that they think the Redskins are so injured and they're going to be terrible. This looks like a trap. It's a trap.
It's a trap.
How about this?
Cousins.
I laid the point.
Cousins is better at home.
Is better at home. Great call. How about the Seahawks game? I think the Seahawks are the real deal. I think they're rounding into form.
Rounding into form. It's like, and everybody says this about them, and it's trite, but it's the cliche. The Seahawks just takes them a while, but it's true. It's like every year. This is how it works. Like, the offensive line gets a little bit better, and Wilson gets a little more time, and he just starts throwing to whatever receivers he has that year, and they make the playoffs, and they go pretty far. And I don't think that a rookie, Mr. Watson there, it's not the Legion of Boom of old, but it's still maybe the best defensive backfield he's probably faced this season.
Absolutely.
I don't think there's a maybe. I think
most hostile crowd too.
Yeah, it's a tough place to play. Tough ass safeties. They're gonna swoop in and grab a couple of his rookie throws. And he's looked good, but let's see how he looks against a fairly good defense on the road with the 12 screaming with all that goddamn neon green that I hate. it's definitely a spot. I haven't put it on my card yet, but this would be a favorite that I would back. They'll probably find their way into a money line parlay of mine. Who knows with that? But this is Seahawks or nothing for me.
No, yeah, the same. If we're wrong and if Watson looks amazing in this spot, then by God, he is the real deal, because this is a tailor-made spot for him to have a letdown game and out of conference, on the road, hostile stadium, difficult difficult defensive scheme to face. You never know where Watson and Cam Chancellor are going to be on the field, and if they're trying to force the ball to he basically just kind of he puts it up there and lets his guys go get it, and I could see this turning into ugly real quick. So I'm with you. We're laying the points. Seattle -5.5 in this one, and we will look for them to win by. I'm calculating here 27-17, but I could see it even getting a little bit more out of hand than that. Kind of depends, I guess, on how Seattle's offense looks. But again, you know, Texans, they're missing their heart and soul in J.J. Watt. So let's see if Russell Wilson can't continue to find great success with Doug Baldwin and company. And Seahawks by a dozen.
Yeah, Baldwin, just every single third down, there he is, getting 2 more yards than I need.
I like it.
What was that? Who'd they play last week?
Giants.
Giants. Yep. No, I did put I didn't have enough action at 3:00 that I liked, and I put together a Steelers Seahawks money line parlay, paid a little bit more than even money, so something
Steelers,
to watch.
Steelers.
Seahawks. So
interesting. I leaned heavy toward the Lions.
Oh no, I'm talking last week. This is money that I've already made. Oh, okay. This is money that I've made and spent. So,
gotcha. So let me talk about this line. So at the end of the day, I didn't end up picking a side in the night game here. Steelers Lions. I think Lions is the right side though. This is again kind of like we were talking about with the Redskins Cowboys kind of setting up like a trap. Everybody thinks the Steelers are back. Everybody thinks they've fixed their issues on offense. They head into out of conference on the road in prime time, and they're playing a team coming off their bye. I think that in general, they are going to be able to score points. I don't doubt that because the Lions defense may be bottom five. But at the same time, Matt Stafford and company can score quickly. They're gonna be without Golden Tate, but the rest of his weapons are legit and are going to be able to find space against what is a pretty stout Steelers defense. All told, I decided the right play in the primetime spot was the over. I grabbed over 45 because I thought this is a primetime spot. These two teams can score. This point spread is gonna go up. And I think by the time it closes, it's probably going to be above some key numbers. And so I may try to hit the middle on this one and just enjoy my Sunday night. Are you thinking Steelers here? Are you going to lay the 2.5, I guess, right now?
Nah, probably not. If anything, they might end up in a money line parlay, a fun one. It's always fun to close it out on a Sunday night, something like that. But I don't know about the spot. It's just it's kind of a weird spot for them, I guess, where I feel like they should be a little bit bigger of a favorite, and somehow that's goofing with my head.
Yeah, I mean, no doubt.
Besides Darius Slay, that is not a good defense where
It's not. No, it's not good.
It's not good. So speaking of coaches that kind of suck lately, I don't know. Tomlin seems to have figured it out now. They have a running back that they can get to quite a bit. That seems to be they've gone to the run.
Todd Haley pulled his head out of his ass.
Yeah,
that was what's different.
Yeah, I hate to throw Tomlin under the bus. I'm more Haley because the play calling was kind of suspect there for a bit. I don't know what they were thinking, but I like.
Yeah, we're going up against the number one pass defense in the Jacksonville Jaguars. Let's throw the ball 500 times.
60 freaking
times. It was ridiculous. Yeah, no, I think both these teams are going to find enough success in the points department to make the over a nice little play here. And given that it's sitting under some key numbers, that's my starting point for this game. And we'll see what happens by the time it closes. But again, I wouldn't mind finding a middle here. If it goes over like the likes of 47 or 48, I might grab the under. But yeah, this is setting up as Lions as a trap for Steelers backers. They opened it at -2.5. Which, given the public love for a team like the Steelers and the primetime spot, that is a airmailed request for Steelers public money, if I've ever seen one. And lo and behold, they've gotten pretty even betting to this point in terms of bet percentages, and they haven't moved the number much. Maybe it's -3 in some shops, I guess. They're looking for Steelers money. That screams trap. That screams Lions if you're going to bet any side, I suppose. Enjoy your Sunday night. Should be an interesting one. We haven't seen the Lions play the Steelers in God knows how many years, 4 years, I guess.
Nice to not have the Giants in primetime.
That is the right call. It's so nice not to have to watch the Giants. Hey, guys. Week 8 of the NFL is coming. The Giants are on bye. You are all saved from having to see them pop up on Red Zone or in primetime. We can all rejoice in that fact, even though the season's halfway over. This is something to be joyous about. No one has to watch the Giants. Monday night,
we'll cover it on Monday. I was just going to say, what are we doing with that? Let's tease it. Five-unit play of the year on the Monday night game. No, I made that up. I don't know.
I have an angle for it's this on your Monday card night game already. That yeah, you won't good. You won't see an angle like this come around for 10 years.
Should we just full clickbait it, even though it's already tweeted on your card?
This is a
you
spot.
You won't believe what happens that comes next.
This spot comes around about as often as Haley's Comet. You're not going to want to miss this. Monday we'll talk about you remember Haley's Comet from when we were kids? I remember Haley's Comet. Let's talk about Monday on Monday. Oh, I'm quite a bit older than you. Oh, okay. Fair enough.
Yep, we'll say that no more traveling. it's one of those situations.
Yeah, we'll be
things.
Back on Monday.
The whale was in a bad travel spot there.
I was in a bad travel spot, right. I was in a bad travel spot the last 2 weeks. I was back to back weeks on the road. That's what cost me. That's why my card was a losing card last week, because of the back-to-back weeks on the road. It always does it to me. But this week I'm home. I'm rested. I'm sharp. I love my card. I love my sides. I love my totals. I got two-unit plays in. If we can get a Chargers win, and if we can get a million points in Buffalo, then I don't really care what else happens on the rest of my card, because I am going to be in heaven on Sunday. All right, man.
Yeah, so we will be back. Yeah, we will be back Monday for a little preview.
Yeah.
Preview/review pod, the short one.
Yeah, man.
Finally.
Thanks for doing this again after I messed it up last time. Congrats on making it through 20 episodes of the Deep Dive. And good luck to everyone on this upcoming week 8. And I'm going to do my damnedest to get this up before this Ravens kickoff. But if I don't, we might just go ahead and cut all that stuff we said about the Ravens.
No, don't cut it. What if we're right?
I know. Well, I'll wait. If I don't get it up in time, I might wait and see if we're right, and then leave it in if we're right and cut it.
That is a shitty move.
I'm giving you the audio wink, wink right now that we definitely didn't record both angles on that game that either team would win, and I'm only going to leave it in the winning section. All right, man. Let's let's call this and let's go watch some football and have a great weekend, man. Good luck in this cold weather. First snap of winter coming your way, and I'll talk to you on Monday.
All right, sounds good.
All right, bye-bye.